What happens when the world's biggest online retailer makes it hard to buy your product? Well, that's a problem that book publisher Hachette has been having with Amazon. Hachette publishes the works of Sherman Alexie and also authors J.K. Rowling and Stephen Colbert, among many others. Amazon's been holding out for better terms with the publishers, and authors are caught in the crossfire. 1,000 authors signed a letter published in Sunday's New York Times complaining about Amazon's business practices. Well, now Amazon is adopting the same tactics with Disney, refusing to accept pre-orders for an upcoming DVD and Blu-ray titles like Captain America, The Winter Soldier, and Maleficent. Joining us to explain is Todd Bishop of Geekwire. Todd, thanks for coming by again.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Ross.
So how are these disputes affecting the customers, the book readers, or the people excited about being a DVD? Are they not able to get these products because of this battle going on?
In some cases, yes, particularly with pre-orders of many of the Hachette titles. There are real impacts that some of these authors are feeling from their books not being sold by Amazon on pre-order. And it's a situation that demonstrates the clout that Amazon has realized in the book market and in online retailing more broadly. And it's interesting how what is really an industry battle is coming out into the public view here through the New York Times ad that many of those authors took out over the weekend and through Amazon's public response.
But Amazon has been having these disputes with their various businesses for quite some time, haven't they? This seems to be bigger, or why is it getting more attention?
In part, it's because it's about this new medium, ebooks, or relatively new medium, and it's one of the first big contract negotiations since the ruling against Apple over ebook pricing and price fixing. And so it is an opportunity for Apple, for Amazon in its negotiations with Hachette to draw a line in the sand and say, hey, we want ebook prices to be $10 or less. $9.99 is the gold standard ebook pricing that Amazon is pushing for. And their contention is that ebooks compete not just with other books, but with all forms of entertainment and information. Ebooks, when you go to purchase one, you're basically choosing between, for example, a $9.99 ebook and a $2.99 movie download to spend your 2 hours with. So Amazon is really pushing hard to get these prices in line with what it wants.
Well, 900 authors are lining up kind of against Amazon. They signed this letter in the New York Times. Jess Walter, as I mentioned, Sherman Alexie, also Maria Semple, who lives here. They called on Amazon to live up to its corporate mantra of being the Earth's most customer-centric company. So how did Amazon respond to this letter?
So Amazon actually then came out and gave its authors and readers a script to send to the Hachette CEO, Michael Peach, over the weekend and said, here are our talking points. We really think that you should go to bat for us and send emails to this publisher's CEO. And they are holding firm that they believe the ebook pricing should be at this level. They don't directly address the tactics that they're employing here in terms of making these pre-orders difficult to get. It is just something that they're using as leverage in this, what they believe is an altruistic battle against Hachette.
Now, Amazon sells billions of dollars worth of stuff all over the years, but their profits are really low, and investors have been patient with that stock price. But there's some speculation that Amazon is adopting these hardball tactics right now to juice the bottom line and keep investors interested in them. What do you think about that?
I think there is some truth to that. Amazon's contention is that if you reduce the price, the overall volume of ebook sales will go up, and everyone will be better off, including Amazon, the publisher, and the authors. So that is what they're really trying to drill home here. There's some questions about some of the economics at the fringes of the ebook world, but that is what they're going for. And that, in the end, will make it easier for them to get profits if they can increase the volume on their own.
Well, as you mentioned, it is a business issue between dueling businesses, but the public is being called upon to take sides. It's almost like a labor battle in that regard.
Yes.
Any signs yet of like which side's winning the PR battle?
You know, so far it seems like Hachette, particularly with the prominence of some of those authors that came out with that ad, Stephen King, John Grisham, they seem to be winning the PR battle. Amazon is a little bit on its heels and responding in that way. The thing is, I have no sense for how this is going to turn out. It's almost like a cold war between Hachette and Amazon, and there really is not a clear path to settlement here. I think it's going to be fascinating to see if they can come to terms, and if so, how.
Todd Bishop is my guest. He covers tech news for GeekWire. And while we're talking about local companies and inexpensive products, Microsoft has this new telephone. It's $25, and they say that they're targeting 1 billion people around the world who do not have a cell phone. Now, there are tons of cheap burner phones on the market, at least here in the U.S. What's new and different about Microsoft's $25 phone?
So this is called the Nokia 130. They just announced it this morning. It's one of those candy bar style phones. This is not a smartphone, but it actually has some features that are reminiscent of what you would get in a higher end phone. For example, you can do some pretty rich video playback, music playback. There's also this Bluetooth feature that allows you to share content with other people who are using the phone as well. So it is very low end, and it's interesting from Microsoft's perspective because they've actually taken steps to cut some of these low-end phones since acquiring Nokia. There was a Nokia line called the Asha, and then also the Nokia X Android device that are targeting these same kinds of markets, initial cell phone users in developing countries. Microsoft cut those, but it's actually now pressing ahead with the Nokia 130.
Well, it's interesting they're going to try to market it to people who don't have a cell phone, because we've been hearing over the years that, surprisingly, even in developing countries, a lot of people have cell phones to do basic operations having to do with their business or keeping up with the weather so they can manage their crops. Where is Microsoft going to sell these phones?
Yeah, primarily, initially, the Far East, China in particular, is going to be a market for this particular device. And this is essentially Microsoft attempting to compete with Android in many ways, because a lot of those low-end Android devices have gotten a lot of traction in developing countries.
And also, I guess, a way to leverage that investment that they made in Nokia.
That's right. And there are so many questions about exactly how they'll leverage that investment. If you recall, this was Steve Ballmer's deal. The previous Microsoft CEO pursued Nokia, actually brought them into the fold for $7.2 billion. And now you have Satya Nadella, the new CEO, raising some questions about some of the elements of that acquisition and focusing much more on platform technologies and apps and services.
Finally, Todd, you know, we've talked about the Seattle freeze for many years here on the show and taken calls about it. The idea that people in Seattle are superficially friendly but not really that friendly. Now I understand there's some data that suggests we are, in fact, cold people here in Seattle.
That's right. There is a business networking app called Weave that operates in Seattle and other markets, including San Francisco. And the founder, the entrepreneur behind this app, it's a way of essentially setting up coffee meetings with people. And it's almost like Tinder, if you know that app, except for business, where you swipe left or right to set up a meeting or to decline a request. They found that people in Seattle almost twice as much declined invitations to meet with people in person. And they actually found that they didn't match as much with other people. So it was really an underlying data that proved the Seattle freeze.
Snobby or discerning, you take that data any way you want to. Todd Bishop, thank you so much for coming by again.
Anytime, Ross.
Read GeekWire. It's the website that Todd works for. It's got terrific insight into what's going on in technology in our area. This is KUOW's The Record.